It's time to talk about the outdoors in South Alabama. Hunting, fishing, and getting outside along the Great Gulf Coast. It's time to take it outside with FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. With reports, stories, how-to information, and Dr. Bill's Marine Forecast. Here's Sean Sullivan and Mike Ward.
And away we go, FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Glad to have y'all along on this. Is this the Saturday before? No, we got two more. I was saying before the Saturday of bow season.
Yeah.
So we got two. Here we are.
Is it the 15th or the 20th?
Well, okay. So bow season started. And remember, we got two things on bow season. We have the bucks only, and then.
Bucks only for 10 days,
that's right. Mm-hmm. Right. So, but we have. Next weekend will be. It'll be the 16th. So I don't think it. Yeah, it opens in the rest. Next weekend.
Yeah, better check. I think it is.
It's next weekend.
15th, if I remember.
Yeah,
right.
So it starts, but it's bucks only for us. Other parts of the state's not. But yeah, so it's next week. So this is the last. You got to be kidding me.
It's does only. You said bucks only.
No, it's bucks only. Bucks only for the first 10 days. Hey, by the way, this is FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors, brought to you in part
by
our friends,
Sean,
at McConnell Automotive GMC. Sean Sullivan and Mike Ward, we're glad to have you here. Yeah, so we're talking on bow season. We talked a lot about the additional zones to the state of Alabama, but this doesn't matter. Bow season opens, okay, October 15th.
Okay? Right.
So a week from today.
Yes.
It is bucks only. For the
first 10 days. I thought it was does only.
No, let's walk this through.
That's right.
We're going to get the show started here in a little bit.
I remember the deal now.
Because we agree that our mean conception date, the reason we hunt till February 10th, right, is that the rut's later.
Right.
And because of that, the fawns being born are later. And fawns need mama, right? The old idea is because people ask, why do some states they can start? You look out west and they're bow hunting in August, right? And all that.
Right.
Okay. Well, they're looking off the mean.
They are in North Carolina.
In North Carolina, right. Mm-hmm. The idea here was to protect does because they still need, the fawns still need their mamas. And actually, in a scientific argument, and I've talked to people that are in this, they said we probably should hold off on shooting does till mid-November down here.
Yeah.
Now, other parts of the state where the rut's earlier, they can shoot does starting a week from today anyway.
Yeah.
But we're saying our argument is that our rut's that much later, so therefore that those does still need to be with those fawns.
Yeah.
And so let's not kill them.
And they are.
Yeah.
I mean, if you go to a greenfield opening day of deer season, all the fawns are with the mama.
Yeah. That was the logic. So that's why when they moved that, they said, okay, we'll still let bow season in Zone B. And we're talking Zone B, y'all, I mean, down here.
Right.
Like, there's several other zones now, but we're talking about Zone B down here. They're saying, yeah, you can start hunting, but just shoot bucks for the first 10 days to give those extra days for that fawn to get weaned from mama or get bigger on its own.
Better take care of itself.
So
yes.
That's why they're saying that. But I would say as a wildlife manager, it's not a bad idea. Now, every property is unique, right?
Right.
But if you see spots, for sure, if you see barely faded spots on fawns, don't shoot your does then.
That's right.
I know we all want – I'm with you. We all want to get the doe killing done, get it done early, all those kind of things. But you don't want to orphan something that can't take care of itself.
Yes.
Give it a second, too. When you see a doe slipping by you in the woods – it's not as big a deal on a greenfield because it'll come out, but slip them down your way. Look back and listen to make sure you don't whack that doe with the doe behind that fawn behind.
Because I have done that before.
Yep.
And
how fun was that?
That
Mike?
Was miserable.
Yes.
That was miserable.
Yep.
I don't never want to do that again.
Right.
When the two fawns come out and start
looking for mom.
Yeah. Or blatant.
Yeah, blatant. And won't leave mom then when you go retrieve. You know,
I don't want to do that anymore.
So, number one, don't do it for that reason, Mike's saying. But as a management technique, don't do it because you're going to orphan those fawns. And unless if you're going to shoot the doe, then shoot both fawns at the same time. I know that when I said it was illegal, don't do it. But I mean, that's what you're doing.
Yeah, I know. That's right. Basically.
Now, one thing is we got to get over, and we've got so much to talk about. But on this management thing, it's a tough deal. Like, we're always like, don't shoot a yearling. Don't shoot a yearling. If you can gauge the sex of that deer and know it's not a buck, you know what the hardcore wildlife managers will tell you? Shoot them.
Absolutely.
They said, what does it matter? They said, if you're reducing population, but I live in a world that I follow the science of the wildlife managers, but I have my grandfather in my ear too much too, that, you know, he's long since departed, but that he'd have hit me with a 2x4.
If you thought about shooting a doe,
yeah.
Period.
Or no, I'm not, and a yearling.
Oh yeah, but especially even right. A doe back then, that was like taboo, man.
But that's not, I mean, that's not logic, but it does go part of how we feel, feelings on it. But logically, once you can get those deer up enough, what we're saying is if you kill the doe, you end up by proxy killing the fawn. If you didn't want to do that, okay. Now, if you get them up to year, this is where it's tough. Later on in the year, the wildlife managers will tell you, if you can tell that it's a female, if you want to kill it, kill it. There's not. They said, what does it matter? It really is a human hang-up saying, I don't want to shoot them. I'll shoot them next year. I won't shoot them this year. Well, you're going to kill them. Kill them.
Yeah, well, you don't have near as much invested in that small deer
right.
as you do the big mama that may three or 4 years old.
That was one of the best conversations I think we had on management ever with Director of Wildlife and Freshwater Fisheries, but a wildlife manager himself, Chuck Sykes. And he got in that discussion about what does to shoot and how many either we've said it or we've been in this conversation. I'm going to whack the biggest, oldest doe we got. All those old does. And the reason we all want to do it, right, is the old doe that knows where the ladder stand is, she is a pain.
Yeah.
Who comes out there and does the...
Every time, going to look straight up at you.
And the neck, and you know she's looking stomp. Yes.
Yep.
We all deal with her, and we all want to kill her. But he said, and Chuck looked at me, he said, Sean, you raise cattle? I said, yeah. He said, who's the better producer? You know, an older cow that knows how to do it, who's good, you know...
And knows how to protect the babies.
And is going to raise up a better calf or a yearling, you know? And he's right.
Yeah.
We all get this idea that I wouldn't shoot a yearling, female yearling, or a little doe. I'm let her get big. I'm going to shoot the big does. He said, if you're thinking about, because a lot of what happens for a buck, we've been finding out, happens when they're in their mama. When their
mama has just as equal
genetics
as the daddy, or more, actually.
And she has the influence of what's going into her body. And you think about it, you don't see first-year does being real fat. It's when they get older and they build up reserves and fat. They've grown their bones, right? Yep. They're not putting energy towards bones. They've grown their fat. They know where to find the best food. They know where the best bed and cover is because they may have lost a fawn before. You know, they know how to do it. They say if you look at that, not only, like Mike said, the genetics being 50% or more, the older does raise up bigger buck fawns because those fawns get more in utero, more nutrition, more things, and they have a better chance of expressing antler size earlier and being bigger, not being behind the eight ball.
Yeah, not only that, if you got a doe out there that's 130 pounds, 140 pounds, and you got a majority of your does is 80, 90, 100 pounds, I don't want to shoot that 130 or 40-pound doe over there because she's genetically a bigger doe,
correct,
probably going to spin off a bigger
buck. But what do we all do?
Buck.
What do we all do?
Oh, yeah.
We shoot the 130-pound doe.
Oh, yeah.
Y'all wouldn't believe the size. Yeah. Look at this nanny, you know, right?
Oh, yeah. We've done that.
Right. We've had big doe contests. Yeah. I've been in big doe contests and all this. And that's fine. I'm not. If that's what you want to shoot, that's fine. But if you're like
trying to manage.
If you're trying to manage and you're making decisions, you know, if you're managing by saying, okay, well, we're not shooting young bucks and we're not doing this, we're letting them get to 5.5 or this and that. Okay, that's great. You ought to probably pair that with how you pick what does to shoot and not shoot.
Yeah.
It's just not as logical. We all know to let bucks get older and they're going to get bigger. But this doe is part of the conversation.
Doe is a big part of it. It absolutely is. In the past, I'm going to say 5, 6, 7 years, they have really figured out that the doe is very important with all the breeding that's going on, you know, especially with the northern genetics and all that stuff and all the breeding. They found out that the doe is really maybe more important than the buck.
And that's even – and what Mike's saying is true, and it's true to just our Alabama deer.
Yeah.
And just the logic of the more nutrition that embryo, the fetus gets, right? Say it's a buck in there. The earlier it's going to have bigger antlers, the better chance it's going to have of expressing its biggest antlers earlier on.
Yeah.
That stuff that's happening then at 3 years old is playing out in what kind of rack you're looking at on that buck.
Absolutely.
And so the argument is, hey, that big doe, the 130-pound doe, she's got the fat reserves. She knows how to find food. And that fawn in her is getting more nutrition than the fawn that's grown in that 93-pound doe, you know, second-year doe over there. So it's just a change in our – I mean, I'm not preaching – I'm preaching as a sinner here.
We have all
I've shot
it.
The biggest doe I've ever – like, man, y'all won't believe. Look at this hammerhead, you know?
Yeah, we've all done it.
And there's nothing wrong with it, but if you're managing and you're trying to, you know, do all these things on the buck side to tweak your population size, like Mike says, we're finding out more and more that does are a big part of that game too, so –
we've done a lot of things wrong in the past.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
spikes.
It was shoe spikes. I mean, we used to have spike contests because, you know, we were told by biologists to shoot all your spikes. They're inferior deer. And after about 3 years of doing that, and every one of them weighed about 80, 90, 100, 110 pounds, we said, that's crazy.
Yeah, maybe we have better odds if we let more bucks get to age before we make that decision.
But, you know, back then, I'm talking about back in the 70s.
Yeah.
That's what it was.
Sure.
No, you know, we thought the biologists knew, but they didn't know.
No.
I mean, we've come a long, long way in the past 40, 50 years, I can tell you.
That's for sure, and who knows what is coming around the corner next on that. All right, so, and we can come back and talk. So, bow season opening a week from today. Of course, you've got, once again, you've got bucks only for 10 days here down in Zone B because of the rut being later. So we need to get those little ones a chance to get on their own feet. We'll talk about that coming up. Also, some fishing in our discussion. I mean, it was funny earlier this week when the conversation happened about Red Snapper coming back online. And of course, it was for charter boats. But when the news agencies didn't report it exactly correctly, everybody said, wait a second, I've been fishing for the last few months. We'll explain that if it needs explaining when we get back. All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 and... it's FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Mike's got me all discombobulated here as we're rolling through the show. Brought to you in part by McConnell Buick GMC. Yeah, it just talked a little hunting there just because you've got bow season opening up next weekend. Of course, no danger for arrows for me. I have not touched the bow.
Sean, I hate it because I love to bow hunt.
I do too.
I love bow hunting, getting out early and hunting, but things change. You know, life changes. And I used to have a 1,500 acre place and a 4,000 acre place, and we had tons of deer and some really big deer, and I was excited to get out after them. But now I've got a little 350 acre piece, just me by myself, my grandson, and I couldn't shoot one that I thought my grandson would have a chance to shoot.
Right.
You know, so things change. You know, now I'd love to go to. I was hoping and kind of planning on going to Kansas this year, and that kind of didn't work out. So, but I still got my bow. I still love to do it, and I'm going to do some more of it before I pass on. I hope
I probably will in November. Check back with it. I shoot a longbow, and for me to be hunting, I got to shoot a bunch to be
accurate.
Yeah, I have to throw warm up pitches a lot, right? And it's something I enjoy doing. I love shooting my longbow. But it's just a thing I hadn't had time. So maybe by – and also, I got to tell you, one thing that has changed, I used to bow hunt, my gosh, just
me
even
too.
During bow season. And I grew up hunting, I'll say, Upper Delta, that management area, a whole bunch. Well, there were a lot more bow days than there were gun days, so I kept a bow in my hand a whole bunch, and I loved it. But one thing that's changed is I used to go hunt, and I'd sit and swat mosquitoes and sweat and all that stuff. That one thing has changed. I've slowed that down. I'm not so much about that anymore. So I want it to get cool. So come on, we'll do that in November whenever the cold fronts get in.
And I tell you, there's so much to do this time of year, too, as far as trimming limbs and getting in. Like this year, too, it's rained so much, everybody's behind on planting bush hogging and, you know, disking and, you know, trimming limbs and cutting trees down that's on their property that from the hurricanes and all that. I mean, it's just a lot of work to do. I don't believe I'd even have time probably to bow hunt.
And I'm the same way. Like this weekend, like today, tomorrow, we'll be trying to get the rest of the stuff sprayed that hadn't gotten sprayed. We're almost done with that. And the stuff that's not getting thrown low, we'll start disking. Which, by the way, got several other calls. I know last week, thank you. I know it was the best of last week. I was up in Washington, D.C., and then up in Pennsylvania for a while. But I was fielding calls while I was up there about throw and mow, which I love. There are more and more people. I get messages at my desk here at work. Best thing to do, y'all, when I talk about this throwing bow is just send an email to me, Sean, S-E-A-N, at fmtalk1065.com, and maybe leave me a phone number there, and we'll try to get in touch and walk you through it. And we can do more of those shows. But right now, we're fixing to I'm probably weekend after this. So opening weekend of bow season, right? Yeah. That's when we'll probably be have enough kill on our grass that we sprayed that will be seeding and fertilizing.
When did you spray?
Started while I was out of town. So
that's been a week ago?
Yeah. So, I mean, and usually about 10 days. It depends. You want a good kill. I'm getting off on this track again. You want a good kill. And you want a good
it's
kill
a good
on
track
your grass.
To go on.
Yeah.
It is.
But people may have no idea what we're talking about. They haven't heard previous shows. This is, we're talking about throw and mow. It's something that I do on lots of my fields, not all of them, but lots of my fields where I can. And this is, I don't disc. So our process has been starting in August. If a field was very high, we'd go in there and mow it. But we'd mow it as high as we could, meaning the bush hog is lift up, the rotary motors lift up as much as you can. Only reason I'm doing that is to make sure that I can get a spray in there without – if your field's 6 feet high and you're riding through with the ATV sprayer, you're just spraying into the dang Johnson grass next to you. You know, so you're not getting a 12-foot spray or 16. So the only reason for mowing then is to be able to spray. So you could have mowed that in July too. As long as you keep it down to what height would the grass have to be for your sprayer to be able to do its work and not get –
a couple foot would be perfect.
Right. That's perfect. And so we spray, and once it's dead – once it's dead, you go in there, and that is that 7 days, it's 10 days. It depends on your spray, depends on the weather around it. But you get that good that we call, you know, we burn that field up, meaning by spraying glyphosate, and we're talking about spraying glyphosate on it. So when you have that in that condition, then we're going back in and we're seeding and fertilizing into that dead stand of grass, and then we come in after that and we mow it.
Yeah.
Low. This time,
low
we
get it
right. So remember, we kept the rotary mower, the bush hog high, when we were just trying to get it so we could spray it. When we mow it the second time after it's dead, we drop the bush hog down, baby.
Yeah. If you get your zero turn in there,
that's
that'd even be better.
Zero turn would be great.
Yeah.
You know,
because it mulches it and all that.
That's
same
right.
Time.
And two things are happening. So you're with the, you know, underneath the, you watch when you're mowing a field, you got a vacuum under there. You got air that's going in a circular motion because those blades are going, right? So that's taking all the seed and fertilizer and making sure it's getting down to the soil.
Shaking it.
And then you're covering it with the grass that you are mowing that lays the roof over it, the greenhouse effect.
Mm-hmm.
And what that greenhouse does is keeps the moisture in there, lets that seed – we all get this idea that now chufa or – if we're talking about chufas or we're talking about summertime, you know, we're talking about corn or soybeans. Yeah, you got to plant those. You got to disc those in. You got to plant them. The stuff we plant in patches, y'all, does not have to be buried. People mess themselves up more than ever. I've been there so many times and been in hunting clubs and watching well-meaning guys with me, and they're like, yeah, I'm coming back. I say, okay, I got that seeded.
They got it set 8-10 inches, and they turned it way up. Yeah, I agree. I used to be that guy.
You're like, these little seeds, you look at a clover or even a wheat seed. Or I mean, heck, wheat will sprout in the back of your truck.
Yes.
Okay? So remember that.
On a pavement out there.
Right. So, and at that point, so these seeds are down on the soil. Seed has the energy to let that plant push a root down one way and a leaf up the other way and get started. And they do that. And they'll pop up through that thatch of grass. And then you're building soil. Long term, if you're like me, I don't have great black belt soils or river soils. I've got sandy soils. But if you go, side note there, people say, well, then why does it matter? Okay, if you have in your hunting club or wherever you are, if your soils are sandy, you're like, we got weak patches, we got weak soil. Walk out in the woods by your patch, out amongst the trees, and take your hand and dig down under the leaves and pine straw. What do you see? Dirt.
Black dirt. Yeah.
Black or brown dirt. Usually dirt, not sand. That sand's down there somewhere, but above it is topsoil.
Yeah.
So what we're doing with this method, the throw and mow that I do, is we're trying to mimic Mother Nature here
build
the soil up. At the same time you're doing that, I'm lessening my risk of a drought. Now, Lord knows it hadn't been the issue this year, but a lot of times October is a dry joker.
Yeah.
And if you do this method, the dew that forms each morning or any kind of moisture that was still in the soil stays down there, and those plants can grow. And when your buddy down the road who dissed everything up to a cloud of dust, his crops all fail, his patches all fail, yours don't fail.
Yep.
Because you got the moisture held in there. And you keep the soil you got right now. Think about when you see all the dust that you're eating. Lord knows I've spent the majority of my life riding a tractor, wearing a mask on my face to keep the dang dust out of my nose and eyes and all that. That's all your topsoil going away.
Yeah.
When you do this throw and mow method, you know, so you sprayed it, you come in there and you fertilize and seed into the dead grass, you come back
or
through.
Just you can seed and then come back and fertilize.
Oh, yeah, you can come back. I'm just saying how we do it. But
a lot of people do it that way. But yeah, I mean, personally,
fertilizer right before rain is the best thing you can do.
Yeah, but I personally want to wait and let that grass get up about
Three,
4 or 5 inches, and then go back.
Oh, if you could do that, it's perfect.
Yeah.
What Mike's saying is the best way. Yes. But I'm saying if you have, like, if you're in a situation like, this is our planting weekend, you know, for a lot of people that I know, I've been in that world, you go ahead and put your seed and fertilizer but put your stuff in the soil, and then you mow it. Yeah. And you mow it low. I mean, like Mike said, zero-turn mow.
Yeah.
Mow that baby. It doesn't have to be super low. But what you're trying to do is add all that thatch on top of it, make that little greenhouse, and then that's it. People will say, and then what's next, Sean? Like, that's it.
That's
now, I have run a Cultipacker over them, or if you want to, you know, you feel like you want to run through there with the tractor
really
and the four-wheelers. But
in
experience in the years that I have not, either I didn't have time or the Cultipacker was broken or something like that and I didn't do it, the dang field looks as good as when I Cultipacked it. So,
that's right.
And with the Cultipacker, all I'm doing, y'all, is I'm running a Cultipacker over thatch grass. There's no, you know, so, yeah, once that soil's there, once that seed touches the soil, it knows what to do.
And I'll tell you the other thing I like about that is that, you know, if you try to do a powder puff field out there where all the soil is really, really loose, like we all like it to be, and then you put that seed in the ground and that seed comes up, it don't have anything really to attach that root to that's solid. So what's going to happen? And this has happened to me many
times. This is a great point. So the deer comes through.
Deer comes out there, and he grabs the grass, and what does he do? He pulls the whole root up.
Right. Not just eating the ends of it off.
Yeah.
Because it's not rooted to anything solid.
So here's the thing. They like the oats, and they like the wheat better than they do the ryegrass.
Yes.
Okay? So they eat they know which one's which. Their nose tells them which one's which. So they're going to pull the roots up on the wheat and the oats, and then you get to springtime, and you look around.
Yeah.
You don't have any oats. You don't have any wheat out there. What happened? They pulled them all up out of the roots. So I think what
you were
talking about is the best way to do it, because when that root attaches to that soil has got a pretty hard base.
It's not like hard like a rock hard thing, but it's a normal soil like you would be in the woods. Find a dang oak that has been there for a year or a half year. And try to put, even out of your garden, let alone out in the woods, try to pull. You're like, right?
And
it's because there's more. If that oak was grown in a fluffed up field that was 2 feet of dust, you pull it right out.
That's right. So, I mean, I think that's
good
the
point.
Best way to do it. Now, I'm going to try to do my fields that way. I've sprayed all my fields last weekend. So I'm going to give it 2 weeks. I'm going to look at it because I had a lot of grass on mine, and I've had it bush hogged already. So I'm going to see what that spray-in, what it'll do to my fields. And if I can get by with it, I'm going to do that. I'm going to put my seed out and run the bush hog back over it as low as I can. And I'm going to, I mean, I know it works. I've seen it.
Yep.
I know. I've seen it.
You came out to my place. Yeah.
I mean, it works. There's no doubt about it.
Eventually you're going to have lower inputs into that soil. Lower amounts of lime, lower amounts of fertilizer down the road. You won't need as much.
Yes.
So, all right, coming right back. Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward. And let me take a second here before we bring our next guest on and talk about the saltwater for just a second, because I did talk about it on the show Midday Mobile this week with Director of Marine Resources, Scott Bannon. There's a lot of confusion, maybe not in our audience, but with the general audience, because a news story came out and said snapper season was coming back open mid-month.
And going said, my God, I've been doing something illegal.
That was for the charter boat.
Yeah.
That was for the charter boat. They're going to get some more allocation to fish. For us on the recreational side, continues to be open Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. And in a conversation I had with Scott Bannon, he said what he told us months ago, he said, it'll probably be open until Christmas at least. So if you want to do some of that, get out there. Red snapper season still open. Now amberjack and trigger are closed now, but snapper still open. So you find those beautiful days out there, you want to go out there and chase snapper, get after them. Still open.
Yeah.
Or you can do this. It's October, and you could follow Captain Wayne Miller around the Delta and see where to find the fish. Hey, Captain Wayne.
Hey, buddy. How y'all doing?
Doing good. You know, it's October. This is our driest month of the year. Usually water clears up, fresh water's way down. It's
speckled trout are all the way up at Dolly Parton Bridge.
Speckled trout are up.
It's Ravine Island.
Salt water's pushed all up. Well, what happened? What happened,
well,
Captain Wayne?
You can take some solace in the fact that it's the driest month of the year, but, buddy, you wouldn't know it if you got out on these rivers. They are still high and muddy.
It's October. This is why it is October, and we're talking about this.
Yeah, it's really been just a very unusual year. And, you know, I mean, the good news, though, is, I mean, we're not talking about extreme river stages. I mean, the Mobile, right now, you know, today it's up about, you know, pushing 6 feet. And they've got it cresting around Tuesday at 6.2. So, you know, the good news is that's not going to blow through any of the lakes in the middle. I guess it stresses you out more just looking at the rivers and how nasty they are, because this time of year we're used to seeing them where they're, you know,
green.
Usually by now that Mobile's got that green tint to it. And man, it's just absolutely gorgeous. Well, there's nothing green about it right now.
and well,
the only thing green about it is those trees going by with that green leaf on it.
Yeah, that's about it, Mike. It's, you know, but, you know, the good news is, you know, a lot of guys, I mean, and myself included, this past week, you know, even though we had a really poor tide cycle this past week, you know, really from Sunday through about Thursday, it was pretty bad. Now today, you know, the weekend here, we're moving into a good tide cycle, and man, this coming week, it's going to be fantastic. So, you know, that's one good thing, and it's going to be high and moving out in the morning. And, man, the mornings have been really comfortable, you know, to fish. I mean, we've had some really nice cloudy days. But, you know, the upper stretches of the creeks and the bigger lakes off the main rivers, I mean, the water's gorgeous. You know, and the water temperature in most of these creeks now is anywhere from 72 to 74 degrees.
Man, it's getting down right then, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, Mike, you know, you've been doing this stuff for a long time, and you know when you start getting into those low 70s and upper 60 water temperatures in the fall, man, it's fixing to be on.
Guarantee it is.
You know, so, you know, really what we need right now, and I've had quite a few people stop and ask me, you know, say, well, man, are you seeing any shrimp? And there's a lot of shrimp down on the lower end of the Delta, you know, along the causeway. But I don't think you're going to see that real big migration until this water gets down a little bit. When that Mobile reading gets down below 4 and these main rivers start to clean up some, you know, which should be within another week and a half, 2 weeks, I think you're going to see a pretty big migration of those shrimp. And, you know, here comes, you know, the specs and everything that comes with it. So, you know, it'll be, I think we're going to, you know, really migrate into a really good fall bite because the water temperatures are right. And, you know, we just need this water to clean up a little bit.
And, you know, when that water falls, it does not take long for it to clean out. It really doesn't.
No.
I mean, you get a good week of a good tide cycle, and it'll clean it up unbelievable. You got so much grass on the causeway too that it'll just filter that stuff out, and the river fishing should be good too.
Yeah,
you know, if this is just
really
clear up.
I mean, it's amazing with the, you know, and we've talked about it here on the show, you know, about, you know, over the last couple of years we've seen such a resurgence of, you know, aquatic vegetation all over the Delta.
Yes.
And, man, that
and south
really,
of the Delta, south of the causeway, yeah.
Yeah, and, I mean, you can't minimize how much that, you know, tremendously impacts and helps in cleaning this water up. And with the title movement, a lot of times you may have a situation on a high tide where the water is a little bit stained up in a creek, and the fish, they won't do much. But, man, when that water starts moving and all it has to do is clean up a little bit, I ran into that a couple of times this past week, even though we had a really poor tide. And one time it was in, I'll tell you exactly where it was. It was in Bicera. I had actually run back in. It was about 11 o'clock in the morning, and the water was moving out, and out toward the river it had cleaned up just a little bit, and I had some stretches that had some grass on it, and I said, man, these fish ought to bite that old Bruiser Sally. Mm-hmm. And I put one on, and, man, it was on.
Now, was that in Bicera or in the river right there?
Yeah, that was in Bicera.
Okay, in Bicera. Okay, yeah.
When I had run out that morning, the water was high, and the very place that I caught them later in the morning, it was muddy. I mean, it was literally muddy.
Yeah.
But by 11 o'clock, it had cleaned up to the point where they were coming out of that grass and just wailing on that Bruiser Sally. So, you just really got to, really pay close attention to water clarity, and even though some of this water is stained, I don't like the muddy water. I don't make any bones about that. I avoid the really, muddy water. But now the stained water, a lot of times, those fish will stick, but you can still catch them. So, you don't always have to avoid, and try to get to this crystal clear water.
Well, Captain Wayne, I mean, when you say, you talk about stained, like in your gauge, how far can we see the prop in stained water or not?
Yeah, I mean, if I can see a bait like a foot down, I'm talking about a bait like a Bruiser Sally, something that's pretty big profile and got some color, some real good contrast, black and blue to it. But and this time of year, what I'm typically doing, what most people are doing, we're not out there, the water temperature is not 89, 92 degrees. I'm through getting out there dragging plastic, 18 feet deep. I'm power fishing, buddy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm throwing a spinnerbait. I'm throwing a swim jig, a chatterbait like the Thumper. I'm throwing those type baits. But, because so many of our fish, they're up in that water column now with this water cooling off this much. But there again, a lot of times when this water's jumped up like it has, you got to really look for those stretches where you've got some of that vegetation that'll allow it to clean up some, like what Mike was talking about.
And it doesn't take much. I mean, it just comes
it
through
really
there.
Doesn't.
I mean, that grass filters that out so fast. It's really amazing. You know, and you're talking about fishing muddy water. I can remember going up to Miller's Ferry, Wayne, and fishing in water that it was so muddy. I mean, as soon as you put your bait in the water, it disappeared. You couldn't see it anymore. And we were fishing. I was fishing with Ronnie Summers, Big Ronnie, years ago, and I was thinking, wow, are we wasting our time here? But we were using white spinner baits with big gold blades and that vibration,
and we
caught a ton of fish. But it was so muddy, I would have never dreamed we'd have caught a fish in that.
Yeah.
It's amazing. It's not that they're not there.
Well, right.
No.
But, okay, y'all got me started on this, though, because I was going to ask Captain Wayne about this. So, I would think, you're talking about the white with the gold, and yes, we do have the spinnerbait, we have the thumping, the motion there,
right.
And you're talking about chatterbaits as well, thumper, but color-wise, I would always tend to go darker in muddy water.
Back in the day, I'm just telling you what
we
did.
No, I'm not arguing with you.
You were
catching them, but I mean, Captain Wayne, your opinion on that, if the water stayed.
What you really want to do, you can achieve, just a contrast.
Mm-hmm.
You want something that stands out. But, the real key to it is just like what Mike mentioned about the grass is the muddier that water gets for a bass, they are going to relate to something, either a hard structure mm-hmm. or a grass line. You know, they want to get next to something. I mean, they're not just going to swim around out there in water that they can't, you know, they can't see. Yet.
Sure.
And so, you know, the advantage that you have there is when it comes to hard cover, like a laydown or a stump, or comes to a grass line, you know, even if that water is stained or muddy, you know what you get a bait that you can work through there. I mean, sometimes, you know, the old saying you've heard, everybody's heard it, you know, you had to knock them in the head. But, you know, sometimes it's a matter of just getting a spinner bait, like Mike's talking about, close enough to one where he feels that vibration. And
Here, come check it.
It doesn't matter if it's muddy or not. He knows I've got it.
All right, let's do this. We're going to run to the break here and come right back more with Captain Wayne Miller. Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors, wrapping it up for this week. Continuing our conversation with Captain Wayne Miller. Captain Wayne, before we go any further, I mean, it is the driest month of the year.
it surely is.
But this is one of the, I mean, it's always great to go fishing with Captain Wayne, but I got to tell you all right now, there's really nothing like it in October, November, December. All that causeway, Captain Wayne, it's just like it's something that'll blow your mind. So tell folks, to get a trip booked with you, how do they do it?
They can reach me at 251-455-7404. And I do, you know, I do half-day trips also. And it's, you know, it's a great time of year, especially to get kids out and introduce them to the Delta. You know, and I always encourage people, you know, especially with youth, a lot of times it's better to target one of those half-day trips because, you know, even if you're catching fish, I mean, they their attention span's a little bit shorter, and you know they can they really really have a good time. And a lot of times we split the day up, you know, and they'll go down to the causeway and go to one of the restaurants and eat. So it's just a you know a great time of year to get out and enjoy the Delta.
Absolutely. So yeah, and y'all booked that. It is, half day. Your arm might be worn out. Like I've said before, it's rare. I got pictures. And I know probably not rare on Captain Wayne's boat, but I got pictures of we're a triple. How many times do you see a triple bass fishing?
Yeah, not many. Not Captain even Wayne, a good lake.
I'm talking about on the Delta, tripled.
Yeah.
Tripled.
Yeah.
Yeah. That just doesn't happen a lot in bass. Now, you catch them back to back to back, but tripled. Yeah, so that happens.
You know another thing, too, Wayne, that I don't know that you do, but I bet you do. I bet you have sometimes people just want to ride and look at the Delta.
Yeah. You know, I've always told people, you know, that I guess the one thing that bothers me more than anything else, I think about the literally there's got to be thousands of kids that are hauled back and forth across that causeway every day that never get a chance to go up and see what this Delta is about.
Yep.
I agree with you. I had one
and
of my
– You know, I mean, that's – you know, I've never gotten a kid in the boat and gotten them up there that they didn't really. They were just amazed.
It is. You go up in all these different lakes and all, and even up and down the rivers and all the big cypress trees, and it's just an absolute beautiful place that people just have no ideas. I had a neighbor that I grew up with. I mean, we've been knowing each other since we were kids, and he actually lives in my neighborhood, and I passed by one day, and he was in his front yard, and he asked me where I was going. I said, I'm going in the Delta going fishing. He said, I've never been there. I said, well, put whatever you got down and jump in. Let's go. And we did, and he was amazed. He never dreamed. We just went riding. I didn't fish much that day. We did catch a couple fish, but we just went riding, and he was amazed at how beautiful that place was.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, for us, you know, most of us, you know, we had – you know, grandfathers, fathers, uncles that were into fishing. And, you know, it was just a part of our life.
It is. It's just part of our life.
But for a lot of kids, they don't have that exposure. And it's really sad because it's something that they really would enjoy if they had a chance to actually experience it.
Absolutely, they would. But it's not just kids either, Wayne. It's a lot of adults. It's a very low percentage of the people in Mobile that's ever been in that delta. When you think about it, 10%?
Maybe. I don't know what the actual.
Yeah, I would. I mean,
beyond
about,
just sitting in a restaurant looking, you know?
Yeah, but I'm talking about getting in a boat and go 20, 30, 40 miles up the river or something. I bet it's 10%.
Or just watch the people, you know. And it's funny, I've talked about it over the years, and we were talking about maps and stuff during the break. I learned all my Delta lessons growing up. Started going out on the Delta, I was probably 13 or so. Yeah.
I'm 49 now. You figured out where the sandbars were,
and people
got stuck on all of them.
Correct. And I mean, this last time I was, we had the gator hunt, I was guiding Chuck Sykes, and then they're like, it's, 2 o'clock in the morning, I'm running wide open, I was running the foot of Chocolata, right? Yeah. And they're like, I'm weaving and coming back, and they're like, how do you know how to do that? I said, because you make the mistake enough time over the years, and said, why did you turn here, and why'd you go so far out in the river before you, I said, there's a bar right there. How do you know? Because I ran up on it. I was probably 16 there. We really dry docked the boat on that one. So, yeah.
Hey, John, everybody will look at you now and say, yeah, man, he's a dignified, guy with a, with the radio station and all this, but I remember you back when you just looked like a river rat.
I call him a river rat.
He is a river rat.
I do like the water. Yep. I do like those things. All right, let's. We got just a second here. If somebody's going to try to pick it apart themselves now with these rivers, like you said, it's not like it's blowing through the back end of the lakes, but the rivers are ugly. Are you fishing Middle Delta, or are you fishing down to the Causeway? What are you doing right now?
Yeah, right now I've been staying up in the Middle Delta quite a bit. And, what I'd encourage somebody to do that's going out right now, just come off the main rivers and run up in any of the lakes or the creeks. And once that water starts cleaning up some, and it's really obvious, once it changes from that chocolate milk, to just stained, any banks that you've fished before or anything that's got some cover, either hard cover being wood or laydowns or grass, just stop and, start covering some water. Don't slow down. Initially, this time of year with this water temperature, pick up that spinnerbait or that, like a thumper, a bladed jig, or a buzzbait early and late. Hey, I've been doing really well on the buzzbait. But, and cover some water. Now, once you start getting bit, pay attention to what the cover is and what the water depth is. And, a lot of times in these creeks, you can go, a stretch that you hit, you catch fish on, you can go, do that again 3 or 4 different places in that same creek. So, you really got to pay close attention. But, there's a lot of people are doing really well right now, bass fishing. And it should just get better as we see these water levels go down. And this weekend, of course, we're looking at a good tide cycle right now. And this coming week, it's fantastic.
I can't wait to get out there and see it myself, hopefully on your boat. Captain Wayne, as always, we appreciate your time, and we will be calling you again real soon.
All right, guys. Y'all have a great one.
Thank you, Wayne. There he is, Captain Wayne Miller, and we're on the way out of here. Remember, always check us out on our Facebook page. It's facebook.com/FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. So there's FM Talk 106.5 on Facebook, but look for FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. We post stories through the week. Outdoor stories, your pictures, put them up there as well. Lots to do over there, so check it out. All right, see you next week.